Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In the new documentary, The Ghosts in Our Machine, filmmaker Liz Marshall follows animal rights activist Joanne MacArthur as she photographs the lives of animals living within and rescued from the machine of our modern world. The film examines our disconnect with animals used for food, clothing, animal-tested goods, and entertainment. And it argues that animals share our basic emotions and therefore should be granted the same rights. So what are human society's prevailing attitudes and norms toward animals? And do you think that non-human animals should be property to be owned and used, or are they sentient beings deserving of rights? Joanne MacArthur is an award-winning photojournalist, author, and activist. Her book of photography, We Animals, documents animals in the human environment. She's also subject of the new documentary, The Ghosts in Our Machine. And Joanne joins us from Toronto, Canada. Hi, Joanne. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thanks so much for inviting me.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Liz Marshall. She's an award-winning filmmaker. She's created 11 documentaries focusing on a range of subjects, including animal rights, the right to water movement, and HIV/AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa. Her most recent film, The Ghosts in Our Machine, illuminates the lives of individual animals living within and rescued from animal factories. And Liz also joins us from Toronto. Hi, Liz. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Nice to have you. And I should say that The Ghosts in Our Machine has its Bay Area debut this Friday at 6:30 at the New Parkway Theater in Oakland. And you can find information at the Ghosts in Our Machine Facebook page or at Brown Paper Tickets. And we're also joined by Carter Dillard, Director of Litigation for the Animal Legal Defense Fund. For more than three decades, the ALDF has been fighting to protect the lives and advance the interests of animals through the legal system. Hi, Carter. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. So, Joanne, I want to start off with you. In the film, you talk about how leaving the animals is the hardest thing after you photograph them. And in many cases, you have to go in secretly. You also say that you have PTSD. Can you first talk about when you started becoming an animal rights photographer and what really prompted you to become a photographer?
Okay, there's a lot of ground to cover there, and that's cool. Well, what I started out doing was just trying to identify how I could be of use in the world. I started out as a photographer, but eventually realized that I could combine my two passions, which is protecting animals and taking photos to make the world a better place. So that was over a decade ago. And since then, and that's when I founded the We Animals Project. And since then, it's become an international project, gets shared a lot worldwide every day. And it's an all-consuming thing at this point, which is wonderful that I'm able to contribute in that way to helping animals.
So I understand you actually travel around the globe about 6 months out of the year?
Yeah, sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less, but basically it evens out to about that. I've worked on all seven continents now doing investigative work or documenting sanctuaries, documenting the good work of people helping animals as well. So, yeah, keeps me pretty busy.
So tell us a little bit about the PTSD.
Sure. I think it's actually, you know, it sounds alarming, but I think PTSD is actually a natural reaction to what I witness. And I think it goes beyond just me being on the front lines. But, you know, we are inundated on Facebook and elsewhere with images of war and cruelty. And, you know, a lot of people are really compassionate. We don't want to see these things. And so we react. Some of us do get PTSD. I had spent a lot of time in the field when I finally inevitably developed PTSD and had some therapy for that and had to learn how to look after myself. And I'm still definitely always learning how to do that.
And Liz, you're the director of the documentary, The Ghosts in Our Machine. And Joanne in the film says that photography is such a powerful tool for activism, and a photo is even more powerful than an action. And I've seen Joanne's photographs all over Facebook, but what's really struck me is the combination of the photographs and then the video, because you traveled with her to some of these factories, the mink factories, the fur factories, and to see the photos and the video, I think, is even like a double whammy in the face. Can you talk a little bit about that, just the power of the photos and then the video coupled with it?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I think that you know, documentary filmmaking and also documentary photography are, you know, very powerful platforms for communicating with the world. Increasingly, more and more people are interested in documentary storytelling. So what we've seen is by the combination of creating a story, a documentary about this issue, but focusing on a human protagonist as a way of, as an entry point, as a way of anchoring this big, complex issue, and also featuring the photographs as entry points to the animals as subjects within the movie, has proven to be a really effective device that audiences are responding very positively to. And we create basically an immersive experience for the audience so that the visual landscape that consists of moving images and then the still photographs and then, you know, a powerful score of music and sound design has created really an entry point into the souls and the spirits of these animals. And Joanne at the center is really, sorry, Joanne, but more or less a device to get there. And it really works. So for me, in terms of my process, when I started developing the film in 2011, I started off with studying Joanne's pictures and then putting a team together that I felt would complement the visual approach to sort of create a seamless world between the moving pictures and the still pictures.
And you can all go to our website, yourcallradio.org, to see Joanne's photos and to also see the trailer at yourcallradio.org. The other thing that you really focus on in the film is the disconnect between humans and animals. And animal welfare is such a broad issue because there's such a range of attitudes toward animals. Animal rights has received so much more media attention than ever in the past couple of years. And in the film, you focus on everything from cows to beagles that have been tested on. It's kind of amazing to see that 65,000 dogs are used for research and testing in the United States every year. You also point out that every year 1 million male calves are unwanted by products of the dairy industry in the United States, and they're sold for about $50 per head to veal producers. So, Joanne, what are your thoughts on our humans' relationship with animals?
Well, we've categorized our relationships with animals. We all love our pets, you know, who are traditionally cats and dogs. We revere wildlife, the charismatic megafauna, who we, you know, donate to World Wildlife Fund in order to protect. It's easy to care for them, the wildlife, because they're at a distance, they're endangered, they're beautiful animals. But the animals that we have this invisible relationship with every day of our lives, they are the ghosts in our machine. They are the invisible animals that we eat, that we test on, that we use for entertainment. We don't give them a second thought, but they're in our lives every day. We don't see them as individuals the way we see pets and the way we see, wildlife in posters that need rescuing. And these are the animals that Liz's film is trying, and my work is trying to bring attention to. We want people to remove their blinders and start seeing these ghosts, because once you start seeing them, you can't unsee. And that will make us more compassionate people, I'm hoping. That's the goal anyway, and make us more conscious consumers.
And Carter, you're director of litigation for the Animal Legal Defense Fund. This group fights to protect the lives and advance the interests of animals through the legal system. We hear the term animal rights on a regular basis, but when you're talking about applying the law to animals to give animals legal rights, what does that mean exactly? Because that is still relatively new.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's probably the easiest way to think about it.
Carter, I'm sorry, we have a pretty bad line. Oh, Carter?
Better. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, that's much better.
Easiest way to think about it is probably in our historic animal cruelty laws. And those laws prohibit inflicting suffering and neglecting animals unless doing so is absolutely necessary and justified. So really, our every state law, in essence, reflects animals' right to be free of suffering and neglect. And it's only in the case of sort of industry that this film exposes that they are either, those laws go totally unenforced, or in some cases they've exempted themselves from the law. So the basic prohibition on inflicting suffering on animals has been in our laws for over 100 years in every state law. It's just the system has fallen apart because the politics don't protect the animal.
Well, and what's interesting right now is that all of these ag gag bills are passing across the country, and animal rights groups are basically telling their activists, you know, you cannot go in to a slaughterhouse, for example, to photograph these animals because you will be prosecuted and we don't have the funds to defend you. So the work that Joanne is doing would be illegal in several states across the country, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you can assume that what is going on inside factory farms across the country is so awful that the people that own those facilities don't want the public to know what's happening. So if you're patronizing those facilities, if you're buying their products, you're essentially paying someone to do something to an animal that you would never do. And cruelty is the norm in those facilities, hence the prohibition on documenting it.
Well, talk a little bit about the power of documentation, because with the explosion of social media, so many people are becoming aware of a lot of these issues. And, you know, obviously the ag gag laws are being passed for a reason. But talk about the power of showing the photos and also the videos. What changes, Carter, have you seen in terms of public opinion of this issue in the last couple of years?
Well, I think that's why Liz and Joanne's work is so vital. Almost everyone I know reacts to seeing the documentation of animal cruelty and neglect. They almost all react in the same way, which is with abject horror. And many people can't bear to look at it. And that sort of speaks to their intuitive knowledge that suffering is wrong, and that in very few, if any, circumstances would it be justified. And they're seeing it calls them to action. It drives them to support organizations that oppose that sort of cruelty and to call for changes in the law. And we know that the documentation is effective because of things like ag-gag laws, because factory farmers and the agriculture lobby will go so far as to criminalize creating that documentation because they know it can change people's minds.
That is Carter Diller, Director of Litigation for the Animal Legal Defense Fund. For more than three decades, they've been fighting to protect the lives and advance the interests of animals through the legal system. Joanne MacArthur is an award-winning photojournalist, author, and activist. Her book of photography, We Animals, documents animals and the human environment. Joanne is the subject of the new documentary, The Ghosts in Our Machine, which is debuting in Oakland on Friday, this Friday at 6:30 at the New Parkway Theater. You can find information at Brown Paper Tickets or at the Ghosts in Our Machine website. You can find links at yourcallradio.org. And Liz Marshall is an award-winning filmmaker. She's created 11 films shot all over the world. Her most recent is The Ghosts in Our Machine. And we'd love to hear from you. I'm sure so many of you have seen these photos or these videos. They're hard to watch in many cases, but what's your reaction to these photos of animals, animal suffering, animal cruelty? And does it change your views about how animals should be treated? And what do you think of the concept of animal rights, protecting the lives of animals through the legal system? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. How do you define your relationship with animals? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. We did a show about the Cove a few years ago. Blackfish has been receiving so much media attention. There's actually an aquarium in Baltimore that's thinking about letting their dolphins go. So what are your thoughts about awareness of these issues? 866-798-8255. Joanne, the other thing that was interesting in the film is that we don't really talk much about testing on dogs, for example, in the United States. There's a great organization called the Beagle Freedom Project, where they find beagles that are being tested, they rescue them, and then people adopt them. And I had no idea that 65,000 dogs are used for research and testing in the United States.
Yeah, I'm actually documenting some of those rescued beagles for Beagle Freedom Project next week, so I'm really excited about that. And, that's the purpose of the film and my work, right, is that these things happen quietly behind closed doors. Why would they let the public know, right? I mean, people care about animals. They will revolt, you know, if they know the conditions that these animals are kept in and how they're tested on. So it's no wonder that people aren't aware of the dogs and the cats and the rats and the rabbits and the mice. The numbers are much higher for those animals as well.
Well, and going back to the images, I mean, you're photographing the beagles in their cages that are being tested. Early in the film, representatives at Redux Pictures, an agency that specializes in helping you to publish your images, told you that your work is really amazing, your work is admirable, but the images might be too upsetting to be printed in most magazines. So can you talk a little bit about the experience you've had in trying to get these images in mainstream publications?
Sure, and it is interesting, isn't it, how editors really protect their audiences, and things have changed since we filmed that. I guess that was in 2011. Is that right, Liz?
No, that was 2012.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, even since then, we're seeing animal rights in the media, as you mentioned, Rose, more and more, you know, undercover stuff in Rolling Stone, New York Times. So it's not just my work that's getting published more, but it's, you know, the stories that are getting out there more. But I think that editors are so protective of their audience because we all have this natural defense mechanism protecting ourselves from seeing cruelty, especially to individuals as innocent as animals, because, again, it all comes back to we love animals. We don't want to see them being hurt. And to face animal cruelty is also to face our complicity in that cruelty. So that's it's like a double whammy.
And in the case of the 65,000 dogs that are used for research and testing in the U.S., what are they used for specifically?
Liz, do you want to speak to this? Or Carter?
Sure. I think one of the most potent examples of dogs in research was probably the use of dogs for Pfizer's Viagra tests in the U.K., and this is an example or a narrative that I think illustrates the problem with the use of animals in research. The beagles in the Viagra test actually had their genitals mutilated when they were dissected and shocked to test the effectiveness of Viagra. And so you have to weigh the deprivation of those animals' basic rights, their years in research, and any suffering that they underwent against the social utility of creating a drug like Viagra. So while you'll often hear the research lobby go on and on about how the use of animals in research leads to cures for major diseases, the vast majority of the research that goes on has no benefit for humans. And many of the cases of drugs are simply things with questionable social utility, like cosmetics, and in this case, Viagra, the dogs in horrible conditions, for something that I'm not sure was worth it, and many people might say it was worth it.
Well, right, Liz, because you hear that a lot, that people argue that there's a moral difference between doctors using beagles and monkeys, for example, in tests that could potentially cure cancer in children, and, you know, fur farmers skinning mink for fashion. What are your thoughts on that?
Me?
Yes, Liz.
Yes. Well, you know, just to back up just a tiny bit, when I started putting this film together and putting the team together to make it a reality, I think the thing I was struck by the most is just how stigmatized and marginalized this entire issue is. I come from a background in focusing on human rights and environmental rights. So as a newcomer to the animal rights world at that time, I think I brought sort of a fresh kind of like, oh, okay, this is something that is not getting the attention that it needs, and I wonder why. But what I've seen in the last few years is what you mentioned just a few moments ago, which is, actually, this is starting to gain momentum. And I think what the Animal Legal Defense Fund is doing is incredibly significant. I think it's, in some ways, it's the most relevant movement in the U.S. happening right now, to have non-human animals considered to be liberated from their status as mere property at the legal level, at the state level. So this movement to do that is incredibly relevant, incredible, and interesting right now, and we're seeing it all the time. Like, for example, 3 weeks ago, as a special edition in the New York Times, the glossy magazine on the front cover is the feature article about Stephen Weiss, the lawyer, and I'm sure that you guys can reference that better than I can, but I did read it, and I was just so inspired by that. So when I started putting the documentary together, the tagline is, are animals property to be owned and used, or are they sentient beings deserving of rights? And I feel like this is just becoming so much more relevant all the time in terms of the public conversation that we're having. So I don't know if that sort of in a big picture way answered your question, but I just wanted to say that it's really exciting to be partnering with the Animal Legal Defense Fund. And I'll be at the premiere in San Francisco later this week, and I think it's... I'm just so inspired by the work that they're doing.
And that's Liz Marshall. She's an award-winning filmmaker. Her latest film is The Ghosts in Our Machine. And again, it's debuting on Friday in Oakland at 6:30, the New Parkway Theater. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. And let's take a few calls before we go to break. Let's hear from Arena in San Francisco. Hi, Arena. Welcome to the show.
I am actually from a research background. I worked basically on mice and rats. Basically, they were being modified to have autonomous genes planted in them. It was kind of, it was unsettling to see that a disease being planted into animals, and I do doubt the suffer that they endure. But on the other hand, this research is also very important for all the people that has relatives that is currently suffering from elder age dementia, which is also plaguing our society. I just want to say that animal testing is a very sensitive issue, and it's a very, very sensitive line to be walked, because on one hand, we do not want to increase unnecessary suffering just for, say, like cosmetics functions and testing cosmetics on dogs, which I'm totally against. On the other hand, I think someone who is, say, like suffering impotency and could not enjoy sex would definitely disagree with your talker's point of view that Viagra is not an important drug. And between cosmetic tests, Viagra, and Alzheimer's disease, there are many, many diseases that if you have a relative or loved one who is suffering, you definitely would think it's important, it needs to be researched on, and unfortunately, we don't have the technology to bring it from molecular level directly to human testing. So,
Arena, sorry to cut you off, but stay on the line if you'd like to respond after the break. I'll get our guests to respond, and stay on the line if you'd like to also dialogue with them. Today we are talking about animal rights. There's a new documentary, The Ghosts in Our Machine. What rights do you think animals should have? We'll be back after this.
Listening to your call here on KALW San Francisco. To join in today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free call. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We love to hear from new voices. And if you'd prefer to write rather than call, you can send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, just a half hour away, our daily presentation of World Have Your Say from the BBC. This is KALW San Francisco Local Public Radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about the new Frontline documentary, United States of Secrets. How did the U.S. government come to spy on millions of Americans? It starts during the Bush administration when we saw the spying and eavesdropping of millions of Americans. Who are the architects? How has it changed under President Obama? And what has happened to the whistleblowers? That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about animal rights. There's a new documentary out called The Ghosts in Our Machine. Filmmaker Liz Marshall follows animal rights activist Joanne MacArthur as she photographs the lives of animals living within and rescued from the machine of our world. These are animals used for food, clothing, entertainment, animal-tested goods, and they argue that animals share our basic emotions and therefore should be granted the same rights. So what are your thoughts on this? We actually have full lines. We'll have one open in a couple minutes at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Liz Marshall is an award-winning filmmaker. Her most recent film is The Ghosts in Our Machine, and she will be at Friday's screening, 6:30 at the New Parkway Theater in Oakland. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Joanne MacArthur is an award-winning photojournalist. Her book of photography, We Animals, documents animals in the human environment. And Carter Dillard is director of litigation for the Animal Legal Defense Fund. They've been fighting to protect the lives and advance the interests of animals through the legal system for more than three decades. Carter, would you like to address Arena's comment? She was involved in testing and says that while it can be cruel, at the same time, when you're talking about something like Viagra, I think it's one of the most popular drugs out there, that it's actually done a lot of good. What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. I think, and I think Arena's point's a good one. I think the key is her point that the issue is nuanced. And I think there are sort of three problems with animals and research, given her point that it is nuanced. One is that the researchers have essentially carte blanche to decide when and how to use animals in research, with the exception of some protection under federal law. They really have the decision over whether the use of animals is necessary and justified. And so that's not really fair, given the fact that she admits it's nuanced, right? It shouldn't be done for cosmetics or things that have less social utility, maybe in some cases where there's a chance for cure of a horrific disease, there could be justified. I think people could easily debate whether Viagra, which side of the coin Viagra falls upon, but the point is that there is no public debate because the researchers themselves are the ones policing the use of animals. There's little or no public input over which and which animals are used and how they're used. The system is totally dysfunctional. I think the second point is the main problem with the use of animals in research is that they make really poor models when it comes to humans. I think the caller is probably well aware that mice were used extensively in testing, in creating models for treating burn victims. And there was a great expose in the New York Times about how those models were all incorrect and that the use of those techniques in humans resulted in massive harm and suffering because they mistakenly relied upon animal models. And in fact, I think as the FDA has said that 92% of all drugs that are shown to be safe and effective in animals fail in human trials because the modeling doesn't carry over. And I think the third problem is that people don't know that the system that's meant to protect animals in research simply isn't working, that it's really left up to the researchers who benefit from having carte blanche over deciding how animals are used in research. They apply for grants. They fund their own salaries. They're self-propagating. People don't realize that the system is really rigged in favor of researchers not creating a public debate, not admitting the nuance around animals in research, and just painting the whole thing as, you know, if we interfere in any way, we're going to stop the cure of cancer, when all we've really seen is the potential infliction of pain and suffering on animals without a lot of social utility given the amount of suffering that's occurred.
A listener who couldn't stand the line wanted to know what are the alternatives to animal testing? So specifically staying with this example of Viagra, how could you come up with a drug like a Viagra without using animals?
Well, there's a lot of non-animal modeling going on. I mean, one of the beauties of the modern age is that information technology and the development of computer modeling has made the use of animals in many cases totally unnecessary. And a lot of companies are simply too archaic or too cheap to switch to non-animal modeling in order to achieve some of the results. And of course, many of the protocols, many of the plans that these researchers have designed, they simply don't want to change to eliminate the animals. For them, it's easier just to leave them as is and to incorporate the animals rather than look for alternatives. And again, this is because this is an industry that's essentially policing itself.
I'd like to just jump in there. It's Liz. And I'd just like to plug another featured partner of the film, which is NEEDS, which is the New England Anti-Vivisection Society. And they actually just hosted the Boston premiere of the film 2 weeks ago. And their website, NEEDS.org, is really excellent. There is an incredible section on alternatives, on the history of biomedical research industry. So it's a very convincing, very empirical website, and I highly recommend it.
All right, and Arena dropped, but thank you so much for calling in, Arena. Before we get to calls, more calls, Liz, I wanted to ask you, you follow Joanne around the globe as she photographs animals in a variety of situations. Which story was the most powerful one for you?
Powerful in what way? Because there's different ways to measure impact and what's powerful. I mean, I think in terms of witnessing, bearing witness to cruelty and confinement and animal use, the fur investigation that we documented in Europe for the film, so foxes and minks, that was very painful to witness that. So, you know, that was powerful in its own way. But also what was really powerful for me on a personal level was the story of Fanny and Sunny, the rescue of Fanny and Sunny by Farm Sanctuary, which is the sanctuary in upstate New York that rescued Fanny and Sunny from the dairy industry. And their story of rescue and rehabilitation is documented over the course of a year in the film. And as a result of that story, I actually had a personal transformation. I chose to stop consuming dairy completely. Mm. And I think it's a really heartwarming and beautiful way of putting a face to an issue. Often when we read about issues, it can be very clinical, or the statistics are sort of overwhelming for people and people shut down. But when you actually present a narrative story and you give agency to the animals themselves through the power of documentary storytelling, I think that you can have a very sort of deep and profound effect on the lives of people. So consistently what we've been hearing from audiences all over the world is that the rescue story of Fanny and Sunny has actually impacted people to make different choices. Mm. and to actually confront the issue of dairy as a significant issue, because often, you know, I can speak as someone who was vegetarian for over 20 years and didn't fully remove my own blinders to recognize that dairy consumption is, and the support of the dairy industry is, as Ingrid Newkirk points out, it's basically liquid meat. And also, the dairy industry is the veal industry. So I think that is, in some ways, the most powerful story for me in the film.
Liz Marshall is an award-winning filmmaker. Her most recent film, The Ghosts in Our Machine, will be shown in Oakland on Friday at 6:30 at the New Parkway Theater. Joanne MacArthur is an award-winning photojournalist. Her book of photography, We Animals, documents animals and the human environment, and she's the subject of the documentary, The Ghosts in Our Machine. And Carter Dillard is director of litigation for the Animal Legal Defense Fund. And we've got a number of callers on the line, so let's go through a few and then we'll get comments. Let's hear from Sarah in San Francisco. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. First, I would just like to thank you and all of your guests on the show today for covering this subject and for everyone's work on behalf of animals. I just wanted to say I've been working on this issue in my life for 30 years now, and I started out as a student activist who was taken aside by a professor who found out that I was a vegetarian for ethical reasons and opened my eyes to all the various horrors that we inflict upon animals by introducing me to vivisection, animal research I knew nothing about when I was 18 years old. I had never contemplated the roles of animals in entertainment and all the these different environments that this film, The Ghost in the Machine, deals with. And by seeing those images back in the 80s, it transformed my life and dedicated me to the cause of animals. And I'm so glad that people are doing this work, because the things that I saw at that time were the animals film, which I think had been made in 1979, the film footage that was taken out of the head injury lab at University of Pennsylvania, the footage of Britches, who was the little monkey liberated from UC Riverside, and a lot of the films that we were using in our activism in the 80s and 90s, those images are now older, and we need to be able to continually show people things that are up to date and current. And those images are extraordinarily powerful tools for us who are trying to educate the public.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling, Sarah. I'm going to take a few more calls and then we'll get responses. Let's hear from Mav in Vancouver. Hi, Mav. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Yes, as I said, that I'm a vegan, and I wanted to respond to the few points that were made about animal testing. The primary argument that's made by people who do animal testing is that virtually every medical achievement in the 20th century has relied on animals in some way. But this is sort of like saying virtually every medical achievement in the 20th century has relied on experimenters breathing air, because animal testing is a requirement in all medical tests. So even when the animal testing is completely irrelevant to the drug that's being tested, it's still required, and like other callers have said, leads to false positives and false negatives. Some examples are the drug in the 1950s, thalamide, showed no effects for the rat models, led to something between 10,000 and 20,000 victims. Vioxx, TGN-1412, known as the elephant mimic drug, was shown to have no effect on animals. And right. I think that the point that I really want to make is that when does the end justify the means? I mean, we talk about Viagra as being this, like, how would we achieve Viagra without testing it on animals? And fine, that's a legitimate question, but Pfizer, the company that developed Viagra, admitted carrying out tests that involved mutilating dogs' genitals, including removing the foreskin of unanesthetized beagles and giving them shocks with electrodes inserted into the center of their penises. And at some point, we have to ask, you know, is this progress worth it?
Hmm. Well, you know, Carter brought that up earlier, and there's so many calls and emails about animal testing. I think we should actually have a debate about this specific issue in the future. So thank you for calling in, Mav. I want to take one more caller. Let's hear from Brad in San Francisco. Hi, Brad. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I had a statement I wanted to make and then a question. I think the topic is becoming more and more relevant to our culture, specifically when, although we're advancing and our quality of life is improving, we're also turning to other animals and species to fulfill our large gaps of loneliness and not being able to interact with each other. So I think that's rather ironic. Hmm. The question I'd like to raise is very simple. If the significant importance of using animals other than humans on testing to advance science, why would we not then be able to justify testing on humans who have reached the end of their quality of life and their life is unsustainable, whereas the research being done on them would benefit all the others and brothers and sisters they leave behind? Wouldn't that be equitable?
Carter, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, there have been a lot of reports on experiments conducted on prisoners, medical experiments.
I think that's the key question, is if it induces suffering and we can recognize that suffering, whether in a human or an animal, and we know we can because most of us can't watch this footage that Liz and Joanna put together, when is it justified? And why are we drawing a bright line between humans and animals? And I think when you get a few questions into the debate, people have a hard time answering that question. And I think rather than draw the line between humans and animals, it's better to say that there are very few circumstances in which suffering and neglect is ever justified, and that that debate ought to be dragged out of the researchers' ivory towers and had in really the public square. And it's an important moral debate that we all ought to be having, and thanks to Liz and Joanne's work, I think it's beginning to happen even more.
Sorry about Carter's bad line. I think you're on a cell phone, Carter. You're going in and out. Carter Dillard is Director of Litigation for the Animal Legal Defense Fund. Liz Marshall is an award-winning filmmaker. Her most recent film, The Ghosts in Our Machine, illuminates the lives of animals living within and rescued from animal factories. And Liz will be at the screening in Oakland on Friday, this Friday at 6:30 at the New Parkway Theater in Oakland. And Joanne MacArthur is an award-winning photojournalist. Her book of photography, We Animals, documents animals and the human environment, and she's the subject of the documentary. And Joanne, I wanted you to also tell us a story from the film. A Toronto Pig Save has been getting a lot of attention, specifically on Facebook, and it's near the end of the film. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience with Toronto Pig Save, and what is it?
Sure. The co-founder is Anita Prince, and she lived near the slaughterhouse in downtown Toronto. She walked by there with her dog every day and saw the animals going in there, thousands every day, to be slaughtered. But again, going back to, you know, what the film is about, these animals are invisible in our lives. They're everywhere. They're on our highways. They're on our plates, but they're invisible. So Anita wanted to make these animals visible and encourage people to bear witness to the animals coming into the slaughterhouse. And people have been coming out by the thousands over the last couple of years. People are bearing witness, and it's a really powerful thing to do that collectively. And this, it started as Toronto Pig Save, but it's now turned into the Save movement. There is Melbourne Pig Save, there's Vancouver Chicken Save, there's Indiana Pig Save. It's pretty wonderful. People are really understanding and appreciating the concept of bearing witness and starting up their own groups all over the world. And I think they have a new website launched about the Save movement, so I encourage people to check out Save Movement online and start up their own chapters in their own towns if they like.
And just to give people a visual, this is a massive truck that is hauling pigs on the way to slaughter. There's small holes. The pigs are basically sticking out their snouts. And in the summer, when it was brutally hot in Toronto, you took so many photos of people basically giving the pigs water because they were so thirsty.
People were really moved by this, that ordinary citizens would go out and give these animals a bit of kindness and love before they died.
And this has transformed thousands of people, and it will continue to.
We have a question from Bill who says, thanks for the show. I can't help but wonder how an animal makes the list of animals that deserve consideration for rights. Animals include rats, gophers, skunks, raccoons, and many more. Rats are wonderful pets that are social and playful and smart, but in this country, they're frequently the object of scorn, lab experiments, and eradication programs. Feral animals, including cats and dogs, become pests. This issue can only be painted in shades of gray. Liz, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think the shades of gray is an interesting point for sure. And I think that culturally we are sitting in the shades of gray zone with all of this as we contemplate because we're just starting to talk about it at large. So there's a lot to be discussed. People need to be educated. The facts should be readily available. This kind of information should be something that people learn about in the school, in college and university, and also starting at a younger age as well. The Ghosts in Our Machine is available in the U.S. for educational distribution through Bullfrog Films, which is the leading environmental film distribution educational company in the U.S., so we're really proud to be affiliated with them. And so we really feel that it's important that the film is part of curriculum, that it's or at least, you know, a screening can take place in the classroom so that this discussion is something that starts to climb out of the gray zone and into something much more definitive from a moral perspective. You know, We see with all social movements, whether it's the women's liberation movement, second wave of feminism in the 70s, or the black civil rights movement, and the earth liberation movement, we see, and now we're seeing this with the animal rights movement, that we start to reach a tipping point where it's no longer really a gray zone, and rather it's more of a moral imperative. And people can just say definitively that it's wrong, and that I think that's where we're headed.
Another question from a listener. Are we talking about similar rights for all animals, a dolphin, an ant, or should there be different levels of protection? Carter, hopefully your line's better. Do you want to take that question?
Sure, and I'm sorry for the interference. I'll just answer your first question, the caller's first question. He made the point about, is there a slippery slope towards research on humans, and I think his point's a good point. People normally think about the morality of use of animals in terms of humans are superior to animals, and therefore it's really a question of human interest versus animal interest. And all the animal rights movement is trying to do is to get people to think in terms of whether any suffering or deprivation of autonomy is ever justified or necessary. It's a simple moral question. People shouldn't be afraid to think about it, ask it, and apply it in their own lives. And that gets us to the answering your second question, which is there's a debate about whether different species deserve different rights. But we know that animals have different needs, and that one need they all have is to be free of the infliction of suffering. So we can say that they share that in common. We also know that animals need, like humans, a significant amount of autonomy. They need to be free, not caged, not deprived of their liberty. That's something that almost all animals share in common. I think if we can begin to say these are things that animals need and deserve, what would justify us depriving them of those things? We'll find that the debate about which nuanced rights animals gets, which is really a second-order question, that sort of, we've got a bigger question to answer first off, which is why are we really inflicting suffering and depriving animals of liberty at all? And then we can sort of decide after that what more nuanced rights we might find, the sorts of Steve Wise, which I think Liz or Joanne mentioned previously, the sort of questions that he's asking by bringing habeas corpus cases on behalf of chimpanzees, saying, look, there's no reason to distinguish between chimpanzees and the sort of humans that those lawsuits benefited in the past.
And just quickly, if animal cruelty laws were passed and enforced, because that's another question altogether, what would it mean for livestock? What would it mean for zoos and pet owners?
I think it's pretty straightforward. I mean, the basic core of every animal cruelty law prohibits inflicting suffering and neglect upon animals unless it's really necessary or justified. The reality is that those laws go almost entirely unenforced. And in many cases, factory farm and research lobby have in fact exempted themselves from animal cruelty laws, which is an admission that they are engaged in animal cruelty, right? Why would they need to exempt themselves from the law if they weren't engaged in animal cruelty? So I think if you really had a simple principle in the country that no animal should be subject to suffering and neglect unless, as a society, we agree it's necessary or justified, probably well over half of our use of animals would be our system's just broken.
I interviewed scientists and lawyers for the film. And so at the beginning of the film and then at the end of the film, it sort of bookended with the thesis, the moral question about property versus sentience. And one of the lawyers that I interviewed was a trip that we made to Switzerland during production.
And Liz, we have about 20 seconds.
Okay. In Switzerland, animals have a different classification under the law, and they're considered creatures of dignity. And I think this is a concept that the Animal Legal Defense Fund is also trying to move forward.
Liz Marshall is an award-winning filmmaker. Her most recent film, The Ghosts in Our Machine, she'll be at the screening Friday, 6:30 at the New Parkway in Oakland. Joanne MacArthur is an award-winning photojournalist, and she's the subject of the documentary. And Carter Dillard is director of litigation for the Animal Legal Defense Fund. Thank you all for joining us, and thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. How did the U.S. government come to spy on millions of Americans? On the next Jour Call, we'll have a conversation about the frontline documentary, United States of Secrets. It starts in September 2001, when the Bush administration began spying and eavesdropping on millions of Americans. Who were the architects of this massive surveillance program? Has it changed under President Obama? And what has happened to the whistleblowers? Join the conversation on the next Jour Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.